Well, I think you know this session's done really well. I'm really happy with the talks in here, and they really flow nicely together. So we just heard kind of on some of the tax perspectives, and so what I looked at is actually, do residents in Hawaii actually support taxing sugar sweetened beverages? Hawaii's policy is different, where the legislators actually pass the policy, but we don't have ballot referendum. So in ours, we're hoping that the public will put pressure on to the elected officials. I have no relationships to disclose, though if the beverage industry would like to write me a large check, I'd be happy to acknowledge them, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I'll be talking very briefly about consumption taxes, because we've done that several times, and then moving into our survey data and looking at both bivariate and multivariate support for taxing sugar-sweetened beverages and some of the implications for policymakers. So in this study, when we were surveying people about sugar-sweetened beverage, and we heard in the first talk, you know, there's a lot of ways that we can identify this. We considered it as any beverage with added sugar, including soda, fruit drinks, coffee drinks. So this is anything that's pre-market sugar added. We excluded 100% fruit juice and anything like coffee where people were adding sugar packets afterwards. We know this. And, you know, some of the recent data that we've seen now is some of the randomized trials coming out that replacing sugar-sweetened beverage with water and diet sodas preventing weight gain in children and adolescents. So there seems to be experimental evidence that as this happens, we're actually going to see a prevention of weight gain. Research estimates that a 10% increase in the price of soda could lead to an 8 to 12% decrease in consumption. And among smokers, tax increases have the largest effect on the adolescent population. So we saw that data from the first talk on adolescents really being the highest consumers, especially adolescent boys. And so knowing they tend to be more price sensitive, that the tax can really have an effect on one of the groups we're trying to reach the most. And while we know the individual interventions are important in some of the stuff that came out at the end of that last talk, policy change can have a more broader and sustainable population impact and really trying to push the social norm a lot like we've done in tobacco. I got a few more states than you do, so I don't know, but who knows? The last data I saw from the Yale Red Center is that 24 states, including Hawaii, have introduced legislation to increase taxes on sugar-sweetened beverage. And the Tennessee one was enacted, but that was enacted at the bottler level, so there's been none actually at the retail level. And it does make a difference where they tax, because if it's taxed at the bottler level, they can build it into the overall price, and it becomes not as noticeable to the consumer when they buy it. And despite potential effects of reducing non-nutritive caloric consumption, many legislators have really been reluctant to pass laws because of perceived consumer attitudes towards the new tax, right? There's a belief that people are worried about the nanny state, that we don't want to tax us, so I don't want to be the legislator. We were told in Hawaii last year that not to come in before the election year. Don't come in before election year. We can't pass a new tax before an election year. So we actually, our governor has been very supportive of this, so he surprised everyone, including the entire public health community, by saying that he's going to tax sugar-sweetened beverage in the state of the state address right after he'd been inaugurated. This surprised us, it surprised everyone, and as often happens when that is happens in legislation, it didn't pass. So the bill really, you know, went nowhere, and so, you know, we were told to take a step back and do the preliminary research, because the governor is still, he's got 2 more years, he wants this passed before he finishes his term. How do we get this through? How do we do the preliminary research to really convince legislators that they should be doing this? So our goal was really to assess the overall support for taxing sugar-sweetened beverage in Hawaii, and also to assess the predictors of support for taxing sugar-sweetened beverages. So who is more likely to support the tax? Who's less likely to support? So we conduct an annual survey that goes month to month. So we added this to our survey last year between October and December. 1,333 adults living in Hawaii between the ages of 18 and 55, and this is part of our ongoing physical activity, nutrition, tobacco survey. In terms of demographics, median age was 40, slightly more female. You know, typical of Hawaii, very mixed ethnic groups. So there are major groups: Native Hawaiian, white, Filipino, Japanese, and the largest percent of mixed race in the country. And then we weighted our data by gender, cell phone, and county. So we were able to both get landline and cell phone coverage and then weight it back to the population. We looked at soda consumption, knowing that would be kind of one of the major factors that we expected. And unfortunately, we didn't ask about all types of sugar-sweetened beverage. But in terms of soda consumption, a little over 30% of our population reported never consuming, up to about 20% that said they consumed daily or more in the adult population. We asked them then, would you support or oppose a new law in Hawaii to tax sugar-sweetened beverages? And we were not specific at how the money would be used, just would you support a law to do this? Over 40% of our population strongly supported this measure. We had another quarter that somewhat supported, and then some neither, and a few opposed. So almost two-thirds of our entire adult population said, yeah, I'd support taxing sugar-sweetened beverage, which, you know, in and of itself, you know, legislators were frightened of this. They wouldn't get close to it because they figured most people would say they wouldn't. So a major effect just there. If we look at it and we break it up by those that consume soda less than daily and those that consume it daily, we do see some differences. But what's interesting is most of the shift here goes from the strongly support to the somewhat support. So still in the population that consumes soda every day, 25% are strongly supporting, another 32% are somewhat supporting. So 57%, more than half, of daily soda drinkers are also supporting a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. So this is, you know, fairly major data when we think about, oh, it's, you know, all these people are against taxes, everyone's against this. People that are actually performing the behavior on a daily basis are saying, yeah, it's okay to tax soda. Then we wanted to look at who's more likely to support sugar-sweetened beverage tax. We found no significant trend for age, so there was no difference between any of the age groups in our population. BMI, we saw a really small difference. So those that supported the tax, their BMI was a mean of 25.4, and non-supporters were 25.7. So it was significant, but I wouldn't get too excited about that finding. Whites, Native Hawaiians, and mixed racial groups were more likely to support the tax than Filipinos and Japanese respondents. So we did see an ethnic difference in our state, which I don't know if that's going to help anybody else in the rest of the country, but that's the Hawaii result. Very interesting, women were much more likely to support the tax than men. So 3 out of 4 women reported supporting the tax. And some of that, obviously, when we get to the multivariate results, we saw the overall consumption is that men are more likely to consume sugar-sweetened beverages than women. So that could be part of it, but also women were more supportive overall. And interesting enough, with all this stuff around regressive tax, lower-income respondents were more supportive than higher-income participants. So our lower-income population was more likely to say they'd support the tax than the higher-income people, which is really interesting because, you know, we say, oh, it's regressive tax, it's going to kill low-income communities. We never ask low-income people what they think about it, and they're actually supporting it. Then we ran a logistic regression, looking at the multivariate with the significant factors. We saw that with men, as they sit at 1.0, that women were much more likely to be at 2.4. Those daily compared to non-daily was 1.4, and income stayed significant in the model. You know, a small effect, but still something there. So all the categories that we found, those three were, and then BMI and ethnicity fell out. So some of those ethnic differences were obviously related to gender, soda consumption, and income, and washed out when we did the multivariate analysis. It's a very quick study, but, you know, sometimes short ones are better. Data are cross-sectional, so, of course, that's an issue. Respondent bias, you know, self-reported data, we had a response rate of 35%, which is somewhat similar to most of our telephone surveys these days. Only soda consumption was assessed, not other kinds of sugar-sweetened beverages. So we had daily soda drinkers versus non-daily, but we didn't have all the other drinks, and something I would do differently in the future. You know, and I would say that it's quite possible that our data is not going to translate to other states. You know, we're a very democratic state. We have an 88% approval rating of Obama right now, which might not be the way all of your states are at. So we tend to be a little bit more pro, you know, democratic ideals and pro-tax. So most people in Hawaii do support taxing sugar-sweetened beverages, even daily soda drinkers. Women and lower-income people are more likely to support a tax. And educational campaigns should be targeted towards men and higher-income individuals to really try to even this. But, you know, really legislators have cover now to go in and hopefully pass the bill this session because there is general public support for this measure. The data can be used as a baseline to assess if informational campaigns can change attitudes towards taxation. So we will be launching a media campaign this year, and we'll use this to see if it actually affects attitudes. And future research should assess political attitudes, so I did not collect the Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal questions. Total sugar sweetened beverage consumption, specific tax points, and the use of the funds. So we're proposing a penny an ounce tax, which is fairly standard. We will be using it for childhood obesity prevention. We want to include that in further assessments. And of course, if we get rid of sugar sweetened beverages, there's no way that kids can get excess sugar calories. So thank you very much for your time. Time for questions?
Yeah. I'm a Richmond, California resident, and I'm really excited to see that this is supported. It seems like the beverage industry is kind of impactful with the cities that are putting up the proposals. And I'm curious kind of what you think, when do you think this would happen, and why is what you think is their response?
Sure. We got through, you know, kind of as I said with the governor, you know, putting this in, surprising us in 2010. What we ended up doing last year, since they said it's an election year, don't put it up, is we got them to pass a, to create a task, childhood obesity task force, which I sit on along with the president of our university and about 20 people from state government. And we're coming up with policy recommendations for obesity. This is one that's coming out, so it'll be introduced in the governor's package in January. Along with all the data that we're collecting and stuff. So we're hoping this session is going to be a session, since the elections are obviously happening now, that it's a good year to kind of get things through. But I think with the data, that people feel a lot better about their chances of getting reelected.
Yeah. What was the, I don't know if you have it, what was the actual question wording used?
Sure.
Was it just, would you support the...
That's, yeah, it was, we did it very simple. Would you support or oppose a new law in Hawaii to tax sugar sweetened beverages? And if they said support, would you strongly support or somewhat support? Yeah. So very straightforward without linking it to say to use the funds for childhood obesity or anything like that.
Do you know what it came after? I'm just curious.
It was physical activity questions. You know, it's an interesting question. I think, you know, a lot of times taxes, and it depends on the size of the tax, but people get used to them. And so, you know, you're hoping to change the social norm while you're doing it. And so, you know, one of the things with tobacco taxes, you know, it's keep raising and raising, because you'll see an initial drop, and then you'll see people start getting used to tobacco tax and go back up. It's most effective in adolescence, but if it's been around since 1951, and I'm assuming it's not a large tax...
Per bottle.
Yeah, that's probably not affecting people too much. In 1951, though, that was probably quite a lot. But yeah, penny an ounce is what most of the recommended is now. So you'd look at least, you know, for the larger sodas, you might be looking at, you know, 64 cents, and then it's, you know, a fairly major portion. Yeah. Get a penny an ounce instead of a penny a bottle. In the back. Do you want to?
That actually is a beautiful segue to invite the rest of the speakers to come back up.
So I don't have to answer all the questions. Do you want to take that one, since you've been working specifically?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. You know, in Hawaii, quickly, we've definitely been looking at community readiness. And what we've been doing besides this is we have physical activity and nutrition coalitions that have been working a lot with their members. They've been doing a lot of on-the-ground events. And we've also been trying to make sure that there's availability of other types of beverages in the settings so that we're not, kind of leaving people out. So we've been looking at, we're working specifically with our SNAP-Ed programs to make sure that, the people that are food stamp eligible, that we're working with those communities and looking at purchasing habits and readiness to change there.
So we didn't ask specifically about community readiness with our interviewees, but some of them do bring up, because they do talk about the regressive argument, and so they do bring up the ways that they've been working with the community to make sure that they're not negatively affected by these taxes. So one of the big efforts in California, in Richmond at least, and I think in El Monte as well, is to promote alternative beverages like tap water. And there's a whole campaign about how tap water is free, it's healthy, and so low-income communities would not necessarily be affected negatively by the higher prices on SSBs. And in terms of racial divisions, that's an interesting point that I sort of briefly mentioned, but I might have skipped over really quickly. In Richmond, one or two of our interviewees did bring up the sort of conflict between different racial and ethnic groups where the resources would be used for different groups or to be used to build, they said soccer fields versus basketball courts and so on. There's not been a mention of how they're going to address these issues, but at least they're aware of these issues, and so they might start thinking about the ways that they're going to address the different communities in that sense. Great. Shout out. So, well, the interview portion that I presented on is actually part of a bigger study on messaging and SSB taxes. So we have four different phases. The first phase was surveying people about which pro-tax and anti-tax arguments they agreed with. Second one was the media content analysis. So we basically... those two phases were basically independent. So the media content analysis was just we went through the different papers that had SSB tax proposals in the last 2 years, and then we searched for taxes, we searched for sodas, SSB, so on. And then we identified people who we were focused on identifying stakeholders. So there was not as much attention paid to the messages in those articles. So we identified the pro-tax and anti-tax stakeholders there. And we haven't matched the sort of media messaging versus what our interviewees have been saying, but that's an interesting thing. I'll bring that up with Sarah.
It was very interesting. We did a lot of discussing with the legislature, and it was mostly about the election issue. I mean, that's really what it came to. And they were like, this is an election year. Don't even bother bringing it up. It was pretty much, they supported it, and they didn't want to bring it up. So Senator Josh Green sits on this task force with me, and he's the head of our Senate Health Committee. And so he'll be introducing the bill. He's ready to go. He's got a bunch of co-sponsors, and so he was just like, make sure you have the cover for me when I'm going to do it. And so yeah, that was the biggest thing was the concern. We have a couple legislators that are anti-tax entirely, but we have one Republican left in the entire state house. So. We're a blue state. Who wants to answer the question? Daniel? I'll answer all the questions.
There's several different ways that the people that we've interviewed have approached this. Some of them just acknowledge that certain messages are harder to counter, and they put more resources into making sure that their voice is louder than the anti-tax or the industry's voices are. Some people choose to just sort of focus on positive messaging and to sort of ignore the negative messaging done by the industry and focus on the benefits that reducing soda consumption will have and what, you know, alternative beverages that people can have instead of soda. I don't know if you've seen, you know, specifically countering anti-tax messages. I'm not aware.
Sorry, is that?
You can ask more questions. There's so many.
Only one has come up in this whole presentation, and I know
Our bill taxes all sugar-sweetened beverages. So it will tax vitamin water. It will tax sports drinks. It'll tax Frappuccino. In the bottle stuff. So all sugar-sweetened beverage at 1 cent per ounce. Yeah, so chocolate milk, yeah. No, that's why, in 2010, that's why it was such a failure, is that the governor surprised us, and he was out ahead with the policy, and we weren't ready for it. And so now that we're ready for this year, we have a coordinated campaign. We've got media that'll be on the air during legislation. It's much stronger. The Beverage Institute guy sits in all of our task force meetings, and the senator whispers to me, "That guy's an a-hole." I'm like, can't say that in the middle of our meeting, but they know each other very well. So there's no you know, they know who the beverage guys are and the lobbyists are very well, and they even fly out to Hawaii.
On that note.
On that?